Okay, we have board time Wednesday, April 29th at 3:13.
Okay, welcome. We can jump right into, well, is everybody good with the order the way it's set? Marty, you're here for a position 1.2, right?
Correct.
So that we don't keep you waiting, why don't we jump into that one? Okay.
Okay, great, thank you.
All right, you're in the...
So hopefully you've had a chance to review the material that Mark attached to the agenda from yesterday. Have you had a chance to look at it?
We were still training it yesterday.
There's also a few emails that were attached from folks who have been tracking whether or not the county was going to reopen the kennel code for either a limited review or a more expansive review. So this response kind of outlines the backgrounds and the facts as relates to this specific case where the Shipmans applied for a kennel, commercial kennel. They were approved by staff with conditions. Two appeals were brought, one by the Shipmans and one by neighbors. The hearing examiner took the appeal up and ruled against the Shipmans, and then that raised some questions of the Shipmans about the code itself, and the code itself is attached to this this response. Some of the general discussion points that are in this, the Von Shipman Kennel, there have been some complaints lodged over the years regarding their operation, most notably the noise that's generated from some number of dogs beyond the private kennel limit, which is 9. They have 10 or more. They're a commercial kennel. We are continuously denied access to the property by the Shipmans. And then there is a question about whether or not the code is constructed, whether something was in operation legally or not legally. It's almost a nonsensical issue in that if they were in operation legally, but not 5 acres, we would have never said, oh, by the way, you have to apply for a kennel code or a kennel application. They would have had some other correspondence or approval. And at the time, we required a conditional use permit for a commercial kennel. So you see our recommendation in terms of rewriting the code, and certainly the neighbors are of a strong opinion that opening this up again is probably not the best idea for them. So,
Marty,
if you have any questions, Chris and I are well versed on this particular issue.
I want to back up to when the last discussion that we had here, were we going to allow them to submit an application because of some of the things that was their fault and some of the things that were not their fault. So we were going to allow them to resubmit an application, but they would have to be a conditional use permit. And I think, were you just talking about that they tried to do that, or are you talking about the conditional use before?
Yeah, there is no record that we have that they had any approval prior to this code being in effect,
right,
or even after any amendments.
Well, so I don't think anybody did.
There were a few that were in existence in like the 70s, mm-hmm, believe it or not, and there was a handful of them submitted correspondence between the kennel and the county regarding whether it was building permits or site plan or some other correspondence, and there were a few of them, to be honest.
So after our last meeting, I thought that we had agreed to allow them to reapply under conditional use, and then this conditional use would protect the neighbors. So every conditional use for every location varies because the impact is different.
But they already went through that process.
No,
they did.
That was the
well,
first time, and we met since then.
Yeah. What, if you recall, I believe I recall the meeting that we're discussing, because Councillor Stewart may have been the one that brought up the conditional use permit issue to assure that there's adequate protection and buffering for the neighbors. I believe the issue that you're describing, let me back up a little bit just so that I kind of put it in context. This was a use that was commenced without any claim that it was ever legal. If it was ever legal, they'd have legal nonconforming rights, and our code's pretty protective of nonconforming rights. So it was illegal at its inception. The board knew that and wrote a section when we reduced the minimum zoning from 10 acres to 5 to create an opportunity for them to apply. And they applied. The problem was that when it was appealed to the examiner concluded that you couldn't possibly be considered for this ordinance unless you were a legal use or you had a legal application. And so he denied the application. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think the board wrote that amendment for this group and a couple others, or this neighbor, this user and a couple others, intentionally. And for that reason, there was a discussion that maybe she should be given this last opportunity that would be subject to a conditional use and these other requiring these other considerations, maybe moving the build, because there was talk about whether it was because it was too close to the property line, whether the use would have to be moved, what other buffering and other mitigation measures would have to be done. And so there was some significant discussion, but I don't think it ever really took a vote because, I forgot, it stopped for some reason. And so we've never written the code that would put this all into play. And so really what needs to happen, if that's still the board's desire, is the board has to give direction to us. We'll write that code language probably by resolution, because unless you want to make this a permanent part of the code as opposed to temporal, we can either do it like we do some resolutions that are only in effect for a period of time, or you could do it as a permanent amendment making these kennels all a conditional use, and we'll take it back through the Planning Commission and get it reviewed. But we need some direction from you before we could go forward, and I think that's what you were thinking about, Councillor.
Our effort was we actually recognized them as a kennel before, not legally, because we didn't have a legal kennel, and that's how come we got in trouble. So then we went out there to establish some regulations on kennels. And at the same time, Yuri there on 92nd Avenue had problems, and that was a big problem that we thought we were trying to solve, and the shipments were off here. We didn't know anything about them. But the intent of what we were doing was to give all those operating kennels the opportunity to be, a grandfathered in under conditions. And I think that was the intent of this board. But then when the shipments went forward, they dropped the ball under a different pretense. I don't recall all of it. And so our last meeting was to say, can they come into a conditional use compliance? We didn't think they could, but I thought we were going to offer that to them.
So there are two things that I recall quite vividly, is that we knew that there were a couple commercial kennel operations out there, and one was the shipments, where they were under the 5-acre threshold. So that's why we wrote the language that they could come in, apply at before a certain time if they were under 5 acres, because they were at like 2.5 or something like that. There might have been another at 4 or 4.5. So we knew that going into it when that ordinance was adopted. As relates to the conditional use permit, the premise of the entire code being written was, let's move away from a conditional use because it's process oriented. And the argument is, well, if you're going to spend time and money, it's better spent in mitigating impacts than on a hearings examiner time and money, right? So that's why we went to the kennel code being review and approval, and that staff would review something and issue a decision. And that's what happened in this case. And when staff issued a decision to approve with conditions, the Shipmans appealed based on some of the conditions that they weren't happy with. And then the neighbors appealed on, hey, this is less than 5 acres. So going back to kennels being processed as conditional use permits is counter to why the code was even created. Now, it might be, we might be splitting the issue, saying, well, if it's less than a certain acreage, then it should be a conditional use permit. If it's over a certain acreage, it can be review and approval.
And I think we made the decision based on the decision of the hearings examiner. He threw everything else out and ruled they were not in compliance because they were less than 2.5 acres because of the way we had written it.
And they could have appealed, but they failed to, right?
They did. They appealed to the hearing examiner. But when the hearing examiner then made his decision, there was no appeal or reconsideration.
Right. And it was based on, only on, not conditions, only on 2.5 acres.
Well, actually, it was based on the fact that they had never been legal to start with. But
well, you go back and read it. And that was the appeal. The hearings examiner said, because you didn't meet the 5 acres. And that's reading.
Actually, no. What he said was, you cannot show that you were legally in operation. And so all the other conditions, whether you're meeting 5 acres and whether you've got setbacks and buildings in the right place.
Yeah, I recall that.
He just said, I'll set those issues aside. Bring it up another day if there's an appeal to this decision. So he just went right to in operation and whether it was legally in operation or not, and set those other issues aside.
Mm-hmm.
That's my recollection.
Tom, here's the decision right here, and it clearly says
what did we talk in our last meeting here? When we had our last meeting here, we looked at that and we made a decision. And it sounds to me like we're moving away from the decision that this board made in our last meeting about this situation.
My recollection is that the board did not decide, and that's why we're here today, is to try to get a decision. Are we going to rewrite the code to open the door for the Shipmans to reapply? Yes or no?
Your recollection matches my recollection. And a little bit more feedback. I think what we suggested, and it wasn't a decision, it was a suggestion, that somebody go out there with a sound meter and see if it even be possible that potentially could save them the time and the money of applying, because it might not physically be possible to have a dog barking on this side and somehow meet the noise requirements of state law. That's where, and that was, if they have denied access so you can't even do that, then they're not even allowing us to help them.
And the neighbors are saying, you know what, everything's kind of quiet now for a reason.
They've curtailed their activities fly below the radar, and so our effort to determine whether or not they could ever comply has been thwarted by that.
Counselor, you have a copy of the hearings examiner's report.
Yes,
and if you would just indulge me for a minute, here's his exact quote. He said the examiner states, for this kennel to have been lawfully established and legally in existence as of April 15, 2011, and thus a lawful non-conforming use, it was required to have had a conditional use permit as of that date. The record shows that it did not. In fact, the record shows that the present proceeding is the first time that these applicants have ever sought a county permit. And he went on to say, lacking a conditional use permit required at the time, it's not protected or grandfathered rights from the current applicable 5-acre minimum lot. So I think it's clear he was basing his decision on that.
Mm-hmm.
He set aside, as Councillor Mielke said, all of the issues of setbacks and noise and everything else.
Sure. At this point, I would not be in support of rewriting the code for a single customer that where we already had a legal process go all the way through and have a conclusion to it, and they fail to appeal even that. So I care about businesses and care about people, but in this case, it would be, I think, inappropriate for us to make an exception.
I think before you make another decision against them, you go back and listen to the last meeting we had recorded.
Do you remember what that date was?
No, but it's all
somewhere,
right, somewhere
in our notes.
We made a decision last meeting. Maybe we talked about it. Didn't make a decision?
No, sir, you didn't. And I'd be happy to go back and listen to it.
Inquiry date here says March 4, 2015.
That's a hearing.
No, that was 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. This is when we asked about this.
I can't imagine us having a meeting here to make a decision.
So
we didn't make a decision.
This was discussed in executive session under the potential of litigation. So that's why you won't see it in any kind of board time minutes.
I still find it hard to believe that we had a meeting and didn't make a decision.
Well,
there was a decision. But
there was a discussion about whether or not if we went out to the property, either the neighbor's property or the shipment's property, and could ascertain, could they comply if they were to do X, Y, and Z? That was the recollection I had. And I talked to Paul and staff and in contact with the neighbors, and really this is we're going to run silent as long as we need to until this blows over, and then we'll ramp back up. That's the take that the neighbors are having. And Kelly Shipman has been in contact with me off and on, and she's just kind of waiting it out as well. Okay. So
the choices before us are just simply to take no action versus to start down the road of rewriting the code or amending the code. If Tom, do you feel like at this point you need more information or for us to make a call on that?
No, I think I could be on the minority side of this. I disagree with you. I think that we were supposed to go back out and drop some conditions to see if they could come into compliance on the 2.5 acres. And if it included that, I don't recall. But I don't think that we did what we were supposed to do.
That may have been possible for us to help them, but they have denied access
before.
To even. No, I mean, just recently. Ever since that first meeting, they have said staff is not welcome there. So we have not been able to help. That's over the last several months.
You talked to me in the last couple of months, and they said they're not welcome there?
I don't know when the last time I talked to Kelly. I'd have to go back and look.
It was this year, right?
It was, it was from the time we last talked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just 5 months. 4 months. What do you think, Jamie?
I think most disturbing to me is if we contacted them and wanted to go out to look at what they have and they deny access.
And I could
what
confirm when the last time any of the animal control stuff, because what we would do in any approved kennels, if they have a kennel, it's more of an operational permit. Let's put that. It's not the land use permit, but it's the operational permit. And the animal control staff have been denied access to the property. She's just not willing to participate.
So the whole issue in the big picture here is 50 dogs on how much acreage?
2.5. There were 38 dogs, I think, at one count.
Okay. But they've had as many as 50 on 2.5 acres. And there are some neighbor complaints, and there have been neighbor complaints for years. And if you have 38 dogs or 50 dogs on 2.5 acres in a developing county, you're going to hear complaints. I mean, I'd move. And I love dogs, but I don't want to hear them bark all the time. And so when did they establish I mean, what's happened in the county is you moved out to the country so you could do what you wanted and have everybody mind their own business and you could just do your own thing. That's why people want to live in the county as opposed to the city. And so stuff is developed out there. We know that didn't get permits, and I'm sure this dog issue isn't the only thing that is operating out there that doesn't have permits. But now we're at the point that under animal control laws, and it sounds like we've tried to do outreach here. Are you satisfied that we've done an appropriate level of outreach to them?
Well, with the shipments, I believe so. In fact, the day after the examiner's decision was issued, Kelly was on the phone with me, and I gave her some sound advice with, this is a legal process. You have two paths to pursue. One is to ask for the examiner to reconsider, and if after that he still says tough luck, then you have a court. The court path to pursue. She failed on both counts, and she tried contacting Commissioner Melky, and Commissioner Melky wasn't able to connect with her, and then she called me and raised Cane with me that Commissioner Melky wasn't taking a meeting with her. So we've had plenty of interactions, and she's not. We've given her multiple paths and.
If she wanted to have dogs on her 2.5 acres, under animal control ordinance, how many could they have there?
There is no, to my knowledge, there's no limitation. The code doesn't have a limitation.
Well, it has a limitation on barking dogs.
Yes.
Even in the county.
Now, if they were under 9 dogs, 9 dogs or fewer, they're considered private. And they're not subject to the commercial kennel.
But they are breeders, and they indicate they're breeders. Yes. They're commercial dog breeders.
Therefore, they fall into the standards that are in the kennel code.
You know, I recall that I couldn't be the only one thinking that we're going to go back and look at the conditions that it might be acceptable, because it was in the newspapers, yeah. And the neighbors called us and said, "How dare you give them another bite at the apple?" So. We did do something like that. It was in the newspaper. We got raped over the coals again allowing a reconsideration.
Video.
Hmm?
There was actually, I think, one of the news channels ran a video.
To me, there's a guiding principle here, and that is that to champion private property rights and to support the liberty of the people to be able to do what they want on their own property, it has its limits, and that is you cannot take away the liberty and the private property rights of the neighboring properties. You can't have negative impacts on the neighbors that will drive them nuts. There are limits, and in this case, this crosses that line, and the reason that the conditional use permits are out there is so that neighbors can alert us and let us know if their private property rights will be violated. And the law and the code is working the way that it should. It's protecting the neighbors. So I'm not in favor of somehow opening the door so that those neighbors can have their private property rights violated. I'm not in support of modifying the code. I think the code's doing its job.
Was that a motion?
No.
You could make it.
I'll look to, well, as chairman, I facilitate conversation. I normally don't make the motions.
I'll go with whatever you decide. I believe that I'm under a different understanding, and I'm going to stay with it, because I don't think, if it's in the newspapers, and we got raked over the coals for allowing them to reconsider, we must have done something along that line here, because it was in the newspaper that we did, and then come back and say, and what I think would happen, we didn't do anything, we just sat back until today, and now we're closing the door on them, I think that we, the county, dropped the ball in what we talked about. I just can't imagine that we we had a meeting in here and talked about something and left here without a decision. And no, we just don't do that.
I think the discussion, I think you're correct. There was a decision, but it was at the request of, we were going into discussions that happened in a different session, so we have to be careful about that. But to get to the heart of what you said, I think there was a decision, and that was to try and find out if there was an ability to take sound readings and find out if they can possibly comply. But the bottom line is, if they don't have any animals there so you can take a legitimate sound reading, then it doesn't serve any purpose, because all we'll find out is, right now it's quiet, and that they can, as long as it stays quiet. But that's not an effective reading, because it's not the way it is when they're doing business.
Yeah,
that's why we brought it back, to say that sound thing, opportunity, didn't work out the way we had hoped it might. And since it didn't, then the question becomes, what next? And that's why we're here, to ask what next.
You're telling me they removed the dogs?
I think they've been, if they breed, they've been selling some of their...
But they had 30 or 40.
Yeah, they had a number.
When
the examiner ruled and we let the appeal times lapse, I met with Bill Richardson, and strangely Bill had knowledge of breeding and the timing. So we gave the Shipmans until like March 6th to sell off their animals and come into compliance, 9 or fewer. And if they've done that, then that's the reason they don't have maybe as many animals.
So that was just a month ago. So that wasn't that wasn't what we decided here. They decided to sell off or not try to come into compliance. But I still think that we dropped the ball by not following through with what we were attempt to do, even though I didn't think they could meet those conditions because of the size of the property and what we went through with Yuri's dogs and the buffers and whatnot. I don't know what the makeup is on dimensions of their 2.5 acres. I don't know if it's square, rectangular, whatever. But even then, we had buffers of distance and sight and vegetation. And maybe they just gave up. But that was what I thought the intention was, to go back and say, can you meet these conditions? So that the decisions not to do it would be theirs, not ours.
Well, you couldn't. It's a little. The answer is, I don't think we made it that far. I don't think the question of what conditions could be satisfied would be made, because it wouldn't be the county, if it went to a conditional use permit process. It wouldn't be up to us to make the decisions. It would be up to the examiner.
Yeah.
But second of all of this would require a code rewrite, which is. Is faster than we were moving.
Right.
We were only trying to find out at the request of Councilor Madure whether or not they could even meet the noise standard, given the noise that many animals would make on a small parcel.
Yeah. So I'm okay with it.
At this point, I'm open for a motion either to move forward with amending the code or to leave the code alone.
I don't know what the code is. I just heard that we don't have a code for dogs.
Kennel code, we do.
We do.
Is it copied?
So we do have a kennel code. Okay. Do we have how many dogs you can have in how much space, right?
There's a minimum lot size for kennels of 5 acres.
Minimum 5 acres.
Yeah. And we would rewrite the code to allow consideration of kennels that are on smaller lots, such as a 2.5 acre.
With the number of dogs being scaled down proportionally.
We never got there.
So when we wrote this particular kennel code and was adopted in 2011, we did not, I know there was discussion about, but we did not get to between 1 and 5, between 5 and 10, between 10 and 20, over 20, a sliding scale of number of dogs per that acreage. There was discussion about that, but there was not interest in pursuing that.
Okay. So that's going to have to be done. I know it's a side issue, but as the county develops this is not the last time we're going to talk about dogs. If we don't plan on scaling number of dogs.
Correct.
Because I think I would like to see these people be able to have a small scale dog breeding operation on their property if they choose, not exempting them still from the rules about noise.
Well, they have rule noise. If they come down to 9 dogs and call it their own personal dog, they still have noise requirements.
Yes. So I'm
afraid of her.
If they, on 2.5 acres, if the only way they can meet code is to go to 9 dogs and call them personal dogs.
I'd like to just offer one bit of input here, and that is that state law trumps anything that we do when it comes to the noise. State law says that no matter what the operation, licensed or not, one neighbor cannot provide more noise to the next neighbor at the property line than the dB limits that are specified in state law. Even if we had some modify the code to somehow allow any number of dogs, whether it be one or more. Is that correct, Chris?
Yes. And the WACs are applicable unless we get approval from the state for some different standard. And they will apply based on the neighboring uses, whether they're residential, commercial, or industrial. They have they set standards based on time of day, duration of noise, and the compatibility of the property uses. Mm-hmm. But and yes, those are mandatory on us. Now there are a few exemptions, but they wouldn't apply to kennels. Yeah.
So I would suggest that we stay focused here. There may be other opportunities to consider other things about scalability and other areas in general, but what's before us is one particular case to amend the code to accommodate this one case, and I would suggest that we be decisive to either accommodate that, change the code to accommodate that, or say no, leave it like it is, and move on.
So. If we were going to amend the code, what is the suggestion we amend it to?
Well, we're talking about not amending it.
Huh?
We're talking about not amending it.
But just, okay, but you want the dogs to be able to continue to be there.
Not necessarily. I felt that we, as well as the Shipmans, kind of dropped the ball. And maybe not. We have a difference of opinion here. And even then, it sounds like the Shipmans have settled to a smaller number of dogs or moved them or something because we don't have a noise issue now.
Well, that may be temporary, that may not.
Yeah. But they haven't contacted you back and said, hey, what can I do now? They haven't done that either, so they're not without fault.
I haven't heard from them in a while.
Yeah. So I would support moving on with no amendment. We did make an amendment with DBA and DBC, right?
Not on dogs.
That was wineries.
That was for wineries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And we already did that.
So are you making a motion?
Well, I was seconding.
Well, I make a motion that we do not amend. Our what code is it?
Kennel code.
Our kennel
title
code.
40, I think it's 42.
At the current time.
40, okay.
Well, kennel code.
26110.
You know, okay, 26110.
Who seconds the motion?
That we do not amend that code at this time.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor of that motion?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. 1.2 is done. We decided we're not going to amend the code. Thank you. And I guess you're wrapped up, Marty.
I must have an allergic reaction to kennels.
Okay, so.
Yeah, I start watering.
All right, so we'll drop back to 1.1. Is that okay? So
Councilor Stewart, that's yours.
It is. And
sorry about that.
I brought this forward last week, and the initial information that I brought to the two commissioners was in January, copies of the PowerPoint. I hand-delivered them. We were talking about improvement in the operations for the planning part of this organization. What I should have done, it would have been a much better process, was to give you new copies of the PowerPoint for your review, and also the copy of the local cost share method, which I think a copy came to me and a copy came to you in March, showing that they are, and this doesn't show it, but this is the same cost that was in 2014 and 2013.
We never paid them in 2013 or 14.
Have we never paid for participation?
Well, not as long as I've been here. The way this used to be funded, the administrative piece was through the grants. What happened in the change was that the grant went away because the population dropped to such that we didn't reach the national threshold. I think we had to be the 25th largest metropolitan area or something. So that caused some concern and a reaction to the membership in the organization about what are we going to do year to year for the administration of the RDPO, because we're kind of right on the cusp on that 25 largest metropolitan area where some years we may get the grant, some years we may not. That's not a healthy way to run an organization administratively and functionally if you don't know if you're going to get the funding. So what happened is they came out with this cost-sharing methodology that Councilor Stewart is showing you. They started to circulate it to all of the policy committee, the policy makers that are on the RDPO, and were trying to garner support and get buy-in for how to fund that administrative piece. That was the first time then we came over here, remember, and that was when Cheryl was still here. And at the time, CRESA staff admittedly had some reservations. There were some things going on in the organization. They didn't know the total value they'd get out of the administration. They knew there was grant money involved, and there's value in that, but they were not, I think, sold yet on the regional the regional benefit that they were going to get and that we were going to get. And then since then, a lot, I think, has changed. And that was the stuff that Councilor Stewart had sent out. Scott Johnson's come on board at CRESA. He's been very involved in the organization. We've seen some presentations gone over there. So you're right in the sense that it was not paid in the past from an individual jurisdiction perspective. It was part of the grant. But with the grant being in flux, because we're just sort of on the bubble nationally, is where this determination or decision was made to try to get core group members together to have sort of a healthy, consistent funding for the administration of the RDPO. And that's what's been talked about for the last year and a half, 2 years since 2013 or whatever.
But there was a previous fee schedule for 2014-2015, and we did not participate in that.
That is correct. This fee schedule and cost-sharing method came out in 14, that year that we decided to hold out. And now that's being re-put forward for this fiscal year from this July to next July.
Where I'm at on this, I have a callback to Scott Johnson and I are playing phone tag because I have specific questions for him. Be able to pick his brain. I want to be able to learn more about the membership history and the go back over the reservations that were expressed by CRESA and make sure that we actually have benefits, return on investment, and this is, it's not whether or not we need to plan. Absolutely, we do need to plan. I'm very, very impressed with Scott Johnson and his leadership in that capacity. It really has to do with how and at what cost is this the best way to go. That grant went away for a reason, and the question is, are we going to adapt in order to potentially do things smarter? I'm not ready to move forward to approve this bill that once we start, we'll continue to repeat. I need to be able to follow to make sure that I get these answers
so that I can make an informed, a more informed choice than I am right now, because I have reservations that were already shared. I'm still, what's ringing true in my memory is the expressions from CRESA already that said, we are not ready. That's the last I heard from them.
Well, can I jump?
Well, Councillor Stewart sent an email to both of you councillors.
Yes.
Yes.
Informing you that
yes,
this was going to be on the agenda.
Yes,
and she,
yes,
and
I know.
She
I've got that, and we've been playing phone tag, and I've been doing the best I can to get input on it. I read the emails. I'm up to speed on that, but I do not have the answers yet.
Scott is available today. One thing I will say is I understand you're going to want to hear it from him, and I appreciate that, but he's
been on board with this.
The only reason we are bringing this to you is because Scott and Anna asked, they reevaluate. So I'm just saying personally, I would not bring this forward a recommendation from funding if they did not support it. That said, I understand you want to hear it from them, and I'm, that's absolutely fine. He is available today. I told him we were going to have this meeting.
Yes, he did say he was available today, but I'm
and,
not.
And we did meet in this room with him. I can't remember when we did that, but that's when we turned around, was when Scott came and said, I think there's value in this regional partnership.
And part of those reservations were that CRESA was actually contributing to them much more than the other way around. For instance, I think Multnomah County and Portland are, part of their contribution is in kind, and Scott's input is significant, and that's not being counted for any kind of in-kind. We're investing in that knowledge base.
Well, there's working groups and working committees, and I would say that CRESA staff, Cheryl before Scott and Scott, are heavily involved and participate in that. And I hope they value our employees and our partnership in those committees. The in-kind piece for Portland is they actually house the physical entity. So RDP, we have cost sharing here that goes on because we have internal costs for things. The RDPO as an agency is physically housed at the City of Portland. So payroll, electricity, paper, all that stuff, the City of Portland, mm-hmm. that's their contribution is, as in kind, we house these. So that's that piece, the in kind piece.
So I want to assure both of you that I don't bring anything in here for financial approval that is half-baked and that I'm not certain about.
I understand
so,
that. But I go back to when we really scrutinized all the money that we were paying out of our general fund. We have even reduced the amount of money that we give our Clark County Museum. We used to give them closer to $75,000 to $100,000 a year, and I think right now we're down to $50,000.
That's right.
We've eliminated all of our memberships on the different types of chambers because we went back and said, are we really representing the citizens of Clark County, and what are the citizens of Clark County going to get from this? That's part of my concern as to being very cautious about getting back and start adding things back to the list that we eliminated. The other thing I have a real hard problem with is their formula. And whether you say that we're paying over twice as much as the City of Vancouver, and I was reading through it again, and somewhere it says, We are a group member, and they are a different kind of a member. But we're going to pay for all of Vancouver and all the Camas and Washougal and the whole county and every city in it. That's our group that we're paying for. And then each city, except for the Washougal, the only other city, I don't know if the Center and Ridgefield are paying or Battleground. But we're paying for them, and we're paying again for the city. I just don't like the formula. I think it's good that we're part of the table, being at the table. I was disappointed in the way they treated you when you went to talk. You shared with us. they imply, well, they imply that you weren't, you didn't pay, so you shouldn't talk, you shouldn't give an opinion. And shame on them, because 2 years ago or a year ago, year and a half ago, they said, since you're so far ahead of us, would you please come to the board and help share with us so we get caught up with Clark County and their preparedness for a disaster?
Well, that was just an impetuous
I know.
Response, as I told you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, if you want to be planning the menu for the dinner and you want to eat mm-hmm. the dinner, you got to buy the groceries.
Well, that's what they say about marijuana, too. Do you want to
yeah,
play?
Yeah, I would not equate
you want to play.
With
you want to play, you have to pay.
So
and that's what they
the
said
biggest
on the taxes.
Disappointment to me on this is if I bring you guys $28,000 that after research and where my judgment is, it has value, that you have no faith or confidence in that. You both mm-hmm. have to double check. You both want a second guess. And you both want to take it out of my hands and recalculate it yourself, or at least you do. That's disrespectful. So if you don't have confidence I can bring you a $28,000 suggestion for an expenditure, this is not good.
We spend $28,000 at the drop of a hat, I understand that. But we got on this balanced budget by counting the pennies as
Tom,
well as
I
the big
dollars.
I
know how to balance a budget, okay?
Okay.
And I respect what
I'm
you
not,
guys
that's
have
not
done.
My issue. That's not my issue. My issue is we're paying the majority of everything for Clark County to include Vancouver. And I'm really sick and tired of picking up the tab for Vancouver. And we do that in everything, and we've been treated wrongly, rudely, in everything that we have ventured with the city of Vancouver. From the parks all the way down to RTC, to C-TRAN and everything else. We pay through the nose, and they take away all of our voices.
And we need to provide leadership. We need to show them what the structure ought to look like. We respect others even when they don't respect us.
I don't.
And we make our way
I'm
through.
I'm sorry, I don't.
It doesn't mean we don't yeah. try to change it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't screw around with an issue like this where we're a voting member at what I consider a crucial board in our region. I don't see the justification.
If we were going to pay for all of Clark County, the money that the city of Vancouver would have paid, they would pay us and we would pay as a group member. We are a group member, so Vancouver shouldn't be paying them.
Well, the way it works is there's two formulas. The large counties that are a partner in the RDPO, they are considered core members. And the way, and you know, any way you're going to finance something, you can argue all day long about. The way they came up with it as a group is they said the core members are going to split the cost of the $175,000 administration fee per the total population in their county. So you're correct. They do total the city of Vancouver within our total county population. But that's true of all the counties who are paying a percentage of that core fee. Secondarily, there's a subgroup, contributing members. Those are big jurisdictions who also want to have a voice and a vote. The way they did that calculation is they took the population of that jurisdiction, in Vancouver's case, 167,000. They divided that by the total population of the region, which is something like 2.2 million. That's about 7%. They multiply that 7%. What is 7% of the $175,000 administration fee? I think that comes out to the $13,000. So that's how they came up with a formula for anyone else who wanted to be a contributing member. So is it less? It is. Is there a formula? Yes. We didn't have the absolute say in it. There was multiple jurisdictions involved in coming up with it, and that's how it came out.
It sounds like they set the formula up to deal with Oregon and the big populations that they have over there. And we haven't really raked into their formula as they adjust the use.
We're part of the same homeland security region.
I don't doubt
and
that.
And we're all, for the purposes of this planning, we're considered part of the whole because we are we have mutual aid agreements. We have all that.
If I could just weigh in here just a little bit. One is, first of all, anytime, I think it's a good idea that we all check each other. That's not disrespect. That's just simply making sure that we're diligent to cover the bases for the citizens. And so I would consider it a compliment if you're to always check my numbers, and that's good. That's not bad. The answers that I need in order to make sure that I watch out for grandma's money is I don't have those answers. I need those answers. And the third point is if this is basically supposed to be population-based, I see the math does not add up because we're being double charged because the entire county population for Clark County, they're calling it 442,000, and they're charging us for all of that, and then they charge Vancouver for all of that again of 167,400, and somebody's being double charged there. If it's going to be population based, it should be population based, and it shouldn't be double charged. I also see fourth or fifth point here. They have other members in here, Metro, TriMet, Port of Portland, and we don't have complementary members on our side, Port of Vancouver, CTRAN, RTC. I don't know what the history of those other members have been in the past. To me, it seems like there's inequity here, and I want to make sure whatever we do in establishing this annual repeating dues, it's going to add up year by year by year, that we start out on the right foot. Right now, I'm not convinced that we're on the right foot. At least I need more information to be able to ensure that we get started on the right foot. So if we can simply table this for now till we get answers for that and bring it back, then we'll be in a more knowledgeable position where I can get these answers to help me to have a more solid basis.
I think some of your concern is very similar to mine, and I would support bringing it back next week.
Is that okay?
I heard you.
Okay. All right, that's 1.1. We'll move on to 1.3. Tom, that's you.
Now I'm in the chopping block. Okay.
No, you're in the leadership position.
I've been nosing around with some other properties, and I shared a little while back with Mark that I went out and drove around and I checked these properties out. One, I went back in last week and went to the Arab house. We call it the Abraham house. It's very clean except for those containers. And then they're not just any direction. They're off together side by side. So I'm not quite sure if we've heard anything else about the complaint, if the complaint was old and they've cleaned it up since then. It was cleaner this time than the time before when I went back and looked after it had been picked up from the original complaint. The original complaint, it was horrible. And they picked it up the time before, and then last week when I was there, it looked very good. I would encourage us to still talk to the church to see that they're functioning properly. If they're working and they're helping people, I would like to see them stay there and help.
What do you suggest for the path forward?
Contact the church who's in charge.
Who would do that?
Staff.
Contact the church and do what exactly?
Find out what they're doing. Find out
in terms of what their program is and
what their program. How many people
and how
are
successful
you helping?
Their efforts
successful?
Are
successful. And do you understand that we complained about the neatness of the property before? It looks pretty good now, but we're following through to make sure that it's working. And I don't know if it's just abused women or drug rehab for women.
I think it's women in crisis. And
is that what it is?
Crisis is a broad term that could apply to substance abuse or being abused by a spouse or...
You know, on that... What was that? The other program we had... Life.
Lifeline.
Lifeline, we required that they came back and report to us. That's because we lent them some money. Are they paid off?
They should be close.
Close to it, but we haven't had a report lately.
We could do that.
But they really stepped up to the bar and really did a great job and paid us off.
Well, they've got the new...
Helped the community and...
Yeah, the new leader over there, Jared.
Yes, he's been... Jared, since he's been controlled.
Forget his last name. No, he's done great work.
Yeah, and it's something... And I think this here is just as important. We have several homes that the county owns that we allow mentally disabled people to live in, like a group home. And I kind of look at this as the same thing. This is serving some needed population, and but I would like to be updated on how they're doing.
The key ingredient that turned around LifePoint is new leadership, and it sounds like Tom, you've done a lot of homework on this. You've got a lot of interest on this. I would encourage you to go ahead and partner up with Mark or whoever Mark can
I'm trying to
buddy up with you to go pursue this and get those answers firsthand.
Okay. I don't remember who was in this with Mark Bolt.
Smith.
Who?
Vicki, and I think it's Bill Smith, I want to say, and they run Grace Church. It's called Grace House.
Oh, no. Who from our staff? Do you remember?
Vanessa would know. Someone over community services.
Right. Yeah, it's one of the community services type activities.
Okay. So Peter, could I ask you to contact Vanessa and then get our contact with the church?
I'll follow up afterwards.
Okay. What did you say the names were with the church?
Is it Bill Smith?
Yeah, it's Bill Smith. Grace Ministries or something.
And Vicki?
Yeah.
Are they part of one of the big churches on 78th?
I think used to have, I want to say Gold's Gym, whatever the church is that's
Lord's
been
gym.
In there.
I don't know.
Lord's Gym.
Yeah. I don't know.
They used to have that.
Okay.
But I think that.
So that sounds like the direction to pursue would be to be able to build relationships, at least close the communication gap, and see if there's hope there. I would think in order for us to be able to approve continuing that we'd understand that it takes more than good intentions and a willing heart. It takes good management skills and competent leadership to carry out the responsibilities, and that's really what's in question. Do they have that, or are they willing to fill that gap and make a significant change to do it, or not? Because if they don't make those changes, we can expect more of the same, which is unacceptable.
So it might be, we'll see if they're in a position to, if they would like to come and do a presentation. A half hour work session. Tell us what they're doing and how many people they've served.
That would be a success story once they've proven that they've been able to manage and turn things around. They may get there, but they wouldn't start by putting on a demonstration.
We'll find out. We'll find out if they're there.
All right, so that's your project?
No.
You and Peter?
I'm still on Access Properties. That was just a throw-in.
All right. Okay.
Paint store. On the paint store, I have a friend who's a mutual friend of the chiropractor next door to our paint store who's trying to negotiate with our staff to buy it. And
he has first right of refusal.
I don't know how that takes place in there, but part of the problem was, maybe you got more information for me.
This is just an overhead picture for context. And
part of the problem that they're having is that by the size of the building, he's told that he had inadequate parking space. So therefore, he's got to tear down part of the building, and that would defeat the purpose. And we're the ones that created the problem that took away the parking. And he is really the only one who would really benefit from this, because the other building must be where he is.
This is a chiropractic office, yeah. Yes.
So if he could combine his parking lot with that parking lot, then maybe it would be enough parking, and he would be the sole owner of all of that. But part of the problem was, is that we have established a value on the property that is quite a bit higher than what he wants to pay because of the complications and the problems that it has.
Well, complications and problems would lower the price.
Yeah, and I don't want to quote what I think I heard because I could be wrong. I guess where I'm going with this is that it's very important that we move properties like this instead of just keep them and saying it's worth $1 million, so therefore I'm going to keep it forever and we have to maintain it as it deteriorates, much like we did the Abrams house, as a matter of fact.
What are you suggesting, Tom?
I think an auction, but before you have an auction, you have to make sure you have enough bidders to get the price up.
Well,
so I don't know the process that.
But if you have someone who by contract has right of first refusal, you got to work with that person because they have a legal right to that property.
He's backing away.
Because of the cost?
Because they want to turn down part of the building to meet the parking requirement.
Do you know any more?
I can follow up on the specifics.
Okay.
If you have his name, I'd be happy to talk to him.
I don't know anything.
We need to get with
the guy that contacted me was the partner that would be going in there.
All right, we need to get with Steve
details.
Hansen and Pam.
I know is Steve said they have to offer it to him first. They're in the process of negotiating that. I don't know any more details beyond that.
And anybody else who would go in there and buy it, because of our requirements, they wouldn't pay us what we would like to get for it. So either we have to do something to address that, or we're not going to get paid. Or if we put it on the auction block, we need to make sure that we do enough publication of it that we get enough.
Let me start out by finding out what the details are and are any terms that we are requiring.
Another example of the same problem is we think it's worth more than what the people want to pay is 88th Street and Highway 99.
The problem, Counselor, is that when we sell property, we have to have it appraised.
Yeah.
And if we get an appraisal that we think is out of bounds, then we can have it reviewed by another appraiser. But eventually, we get to a value that we have to obtain, or we're not legally entitled to sell the property.
Yes.
We cannot sell it for less than it's worth, because that constitutes a gift of public funds. So I know it's frustrating.
I think what I'm saying is if you do enough advertising out there, and 100 people say you're overpriced, I'm not going to give you that, we should be looking at offers, reasonable offers, rather than just sit on this property. When we bought this because we did so much damage to the store that it was cheaper for us to buy the whole thing, take what we needed for the improvements on Highway 88, on 88th Street, that then we would sell the property at much lesser cost.
Right. I think what we would do, if we went out to auction and all the bids were substantially below the appraised price, we would furnish that information to the appraiser and ask him to reevaluate his appraisal, which might result in a lower appraisal.
Yeah.
And then we might get a bidder at that point that would meet the minimum price requirement.
Yeah. That property, this property, comes back on the tax roll.
I can tell you,
we'll make it up.
I want that building gone.
Yes.
We don't need to own it any longer.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If this guy becomes the sole owner and he owns all the parking,
right,
then maybe that would make it legal.
Right, and I'll get with whoever's, Marty, I think, to see if these two facilities are owned by the same. Because you don't need much parking for a chiropractor.
And we haven't barricaded it off here. You can still make left turns over there, too.
Uh-huh.
So it's still.
I'll get the details of what the offer is
for you.
All
right, great.
Yeah, I live about right there.
And related to that, I would think if there is a first right of refusal, that he would. There must be some process that says I sign this. It says I waive my rights.
Right.
I already offered.
Yeah, there's official cut bait period, and he either deals with us or he doesn't.
Okay.
Okay.
So Peter, you're working with him to.
All right, we'll find out the details on that
next time.
Thank you, Peter. Okay. Moving on.
Okay.
And just for your information, I included this. This was a list from Steve Hansen. Last year, we didn't really sell any properties. These are properties that are currently in the works for him to market and sell, and he'll be ultimately coming for approval to liquidate those.
And then he gets with a contractor that that does auctions of this type all over the country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they publish fancy pamphlets. They have a website. So
that's really important.
So it's out there.
So and most of these are owned by Public Works. Because of road projects, when they're sold, that money will go back to the road fund. Or to
and this is 88th and Highway 99, the buy low market.
Yes.
So
again, that's in the process being refined.
Okay. Very good. Is that 1.3? Yeah. So that wraps up 1.3, Tom?
Yes.
Okay. So moving on to 1.4. That's yours.
Parkland excess property. I went out and reviewed this. We have some pictures of this. This is a case, in my opinion, that we may have overbought park property, and I went out there and. Let me see now where I get my bearings.
Thank you.
So to go in there, you go to the Le Centre Junction, and then you go north on the frontage road that goes to Paradise Park, and you go to what is called 31st Street, and you turn right on that. And if you go down there, and I'm not sure if I could find it on here. You know, Peter, I think... Oh, here we go. Here we go. When I went all the way down to the end of 31st Street, directly behind Paradise Park, there's a big, beautiful new home. Two-story home, just finishing up being built. And that is, let me see if I can find it. Now maybe
it's this one right here, Counselor.
See, down past the bus barn. You know, that could be it right there.
Okay.
Right there. Mm-hmm. See it? That could have been. No, that's not right. Because then I turned right and went up to the next farmhouse. And that was on the same road, but it was overlooking the big new house. So then I came back and went back in here, trying to get down to the where the gas pipe crosses the river. And that's a little black spot down here close to the river. I drove down, and I could see these houses now. I didn't see them before. I didn't notice them. These houses up along the hill in the darker green area. That's a rolling hill is what that is. And it goes all the way down to the very, very bottom house. And then there's a building where the road turns and goes into the pipe pump. And right there, there's another building right in there. So one of the things that we were thinking, that this was bought by Conservation Futures dollars to connect walking trails. And we own all of the light green. You own all of the light green. So that means that we own all the residents on this. And then the other one, this one right here, up here on the left side between 31st Street and the road that goes down to the park, either we have a squatter in there or it's really a rundown, and it looks like it might be a hoarder. He's in there in a travel trailer, all overgrown, fine, no trespassing. That's ours, too.
The plan doesn't use that, man.
And so it looks like it. I couldn't figure out why we purchased that property with Conservation Futures, because it's all residential around it, all buildable. It's all buildable land. My recommendation was to make sure we had plenty of room for a trail, for our trails. But I'm looking at the connection right here. That connection right there across the back, that connects the property here and here is the same property. And then the one in the middle is cut out of it. But that was our latest purchase. And there's like 300 feet at least down here. These are, how many acres is that? The two pieces here?
Around the house, it's 20 acres in the residence.
That's 20 acres there.
Well, the house and the parts, the square around the house is like 5 acres, and then around it is another 16. So it's
right.
20 acres total.
Yeah. 5 and 16, counting those two. And then you see the house right in the middle of both properties that we own, right here. And then, was that the latest purchase, the one kind of a square, butting up against Paradise Park?
Yeah, these were all purchased about the same time from two owners.
So, what are you suggesting?
I think that we need to provide for a trail. But this is all buildable property. And the other thing, the other stuff we bought with Conservation Futures, I don't know, I don't remember this ravine here, there. But it was kind of divided, you said.
So I
would like to make sure that we have a good forest trail through there and put the other stuff back on the market. We might have to redraw some boundary lines or property lines and then put the rest on the market. Now, when it comes up in here, we want all this because this is a floodplain. We do want this in here.
So I assume that there's two reasons for us to own land out there. One is to preserve it because it's floodplain, it's sensitive land. And the other one is that it sounds like for a trail.
Riparian area and
so
trail.
I would think then that what we would do would be to have either those that steward that property, whether it be DES or their parks advisory board, DES,
Pat Lee with DC,
have them suggest what would make sense, draw lines that would keep what would be the appropriate for trails and for preservation, and suggest where the lines would be if there is something to be sold.
We'll come back with that.
I mean, as a minimum, you have this piece here.
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
And if you
look
at this plan, this piece is not incorporated into this plan.
Yeah.
And so
that's actually quite a large area. That's where that hoarder, I think, is squatted on our property.
Regardless of the details or the lines here, I would think we would just simply ask staff to show the most aggressive and then show the other end of the spectrum, the most conservative, and present them both so we can see the ends of the spectrum and see what they come back and recommend.
So
if there's something to sell there to put back on the market because we're not the private citizens would be a better stewards over the property than we would, then I would think they would propose that.
We also have a possibility of Paradise Park might be interested in some of this.
You know, the curious thing is that this was part of an acquisition proposal made to a previous board.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. We need to keep
And we have to find out what source of funds were used. Pardon?
What
source of funds were used to buy it? Because if any of this was grant funded and we sell property, then we'll have to buy additional property to replace it.
Which is not a problem. Because we would like to be able to buy properties to connect trails better and that kind of thing. So that's not a problem. Whether or not that's encumbrance, as long as that's transferable to another piece of property, right?
I know there's a great deal that was bought in with Conservation Futures, and that goes back to purchase more property, no problem. I don't know about the grants.
Right. So we'd have to search every parcel. Yeah.
But we'll bring back more information, and we'll also get with staff.
Now, staff would say this is the concept plan. If it's within the legacy land purchase requirements, they would recommend keeping it based on the previous guidelines and previous board approval. If you want to consider selling a specific property, if you want to identify that, we could ask them to
analyze that.
I think what we're getting here is that staff, which of these parcels could be reshaped?
Yeah.
How many acres could be made available and still achieve this plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, the fact that we've inherited somebody's concept, to me, means nothing. Mm-hmm. Instead, we'd ask them, based on the real world that you see out there, give us two proposals. One that's one end of the spectrum, the other end of the spectrum, that both accomplishes the goals of trails and preservation.
Okay.
And We won't know. I'm done. I got one more little thing on my little scratchy note. We won't know until next week what if the unions are going to accept our offer of accepting transparency. And I'm hoping they will. If they don't, I would like to take part in or encourage bringing back transparency resolution. So we'll talk about that along the way. I'm done.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Each board time for the last month or so, you bring in specific properties that you've earmarked for sale. It seems to be part of some kind of a plan, which I'm not sure what the plan is.
I'll share with you. I've been.
And are there more parcels yet to come?
There's literally hundreds of parcels that our staff, in their opinion, was not excess. So I've started researching piece by piece some of the areas to take a look at. And then we'll look and see if we don't have to agree with staff. Maybe we do agree with staff. But if we bring it back, because of the reluctance of staff to bring it to us, I've had to go out and get it.
Tom, I want to make sure that you don't interrupt Jeannie when she's speaking.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt her.
No,
I thought she was done.
Okay.
But you understand my point. We see one or two or three of these every week. This is part of a bigger plan, obviously.
Ongoing.
And I want to know what the big plan is. So you say that this is to get property back on the tax rolls.
That's correct.
These are all key premium properties that you're selecting.
Buildable property.
In the case of this parcel that you're talking about being a prime saleable property.
It could even be a commercial property for the center.
Well, at the other time, Mr. Mador is suggesting that we would want to consolidate some parcels. Why wouldn't we be looking to add parcels in here to be in conjunction with this, especially since there's some kind of road access to
that's
this.
The frontage road going down to the park right here.
Yeah.
And the freeway's out here. They're right next to the freeway and that road going down to Paradise Park. And then there's a third road, which
is
31st.
So why wouldn't this be good for parking? I'm not sold on the idea that every vacant parcel needs to be sold and added back to the tax rolls, especially if it's adjacent to something that we already own as park.
We're trying to get the best use of the property. We believe in trails. We believe in riparian area. We believe in forests large enough to have a function. And that's what we do. But what we've done in the past, when we took our conservation futures money all at one time, and then we went out and we just bought like crazy. Now we're paying back. We have no money for maintenance of all the land that we've been buying. Now, and we're still paying for it, but we're paying interest on that money. That was actions done by previous boards. We have no money for maintenance. We are the second largest landowner in the state of Washington with conservation futures. And that was the bill that we asked Benton to take
up
there.
Well, that's statewide. That's not just Clark County, though.
Right, yeah. But we are the second largest landowner of conservation futures property.
Well, I'm hearing contradictory things. I'm hearing sell it and go buy a parcel that would be more useful in conjunction with a park, while the parcel that we're talking about selling is specifically adjacent to a large park that has riverfront
access. We're keeping that. There's roughly in there, I'm guessing in that area there you probably have 150 acres of buildable land. And there's houses all through there. You'll see them in there. And and those parcels, we need to maintain our green spaces. And if you look at that trails map, see that big loop over there? That big loop is there because that's a floodplain, and we would maintain that. And we could probably take and sell what we don't need up here and go purchase this over here.
So what I would suggest is that we get more information from DES.
With
Parks and Trails, and see what they recommend.
It's just best use of land, and in this case, the majority of it's conservation futures. That money goes back to conservation futures, and we buy more con futures property.
Well, I think I'm very skeptical about selling
you don't trust
land
me.
Adjacent to parkland, because to keep what we had have and use it in the future is likely way cheaper than selling it and then trying to find comparable land somewhere.
We could buy
else.
Today. We could take those same dollars and buy land today that's not connecting. Remember, I kept talking about we have trails that don't connect because we don't own the land in between.
And I agree that we should work on developing that interconnected trail.
And eventually we could purchase all the way up to Daybreak Park. Yeah.
What I'm not agreeing with is that every sale that you're bringing forward, they don't all make sense to me.
That's what I brought them here to talk about.
Well, and I appreciate that.
Okay.
I'm done. So we'll get input from staff and recommendations from Parks, Trails, and DES, Conservation Futures. Okay, so that's in the works. Mark, you're, and Peter, you're on that?
2.1, I'm going to set a record for brevity. I would like to ask that if you've received communications from anyone in whatever form, except verbal conversations, that you ensure that the community planning receives, and this is about the comp plan, any communication you receive, please ensure that Oliver or Jaco or Gordy Euler or Mary Beth O'Donnell gets a copy of it for inclusion in the record. It's our responsibility to have a complete record, and there have been assertions by some that our record is incomplete, and I would like to do everything we can to ensure that our record is complete as we can make it.
I don't understand. What are you talking about?
If you get an email from someone saying, I feel this way about Alternative 4 or about the comp plan in general, Oliver needs to have that forwarded to him so he can print a copy, index it, and put it in the record.
He doesn't have all those from Carol Levin? Thank goodness I saved them. I'll give them to him.
Well,
they've jammed up my computer.
Carol and Susan, think, are pretty diligent about ensuring that Oliver is copied on these things, but there are other people in the county who are not as diligent as they are. So this is just a reminder to keep us on track with having a complete plan so that we're not challenged on the basis of having an incomplete record.
So is there something from Carol or Susan that they haven't received, or how do I share that?
They have made assertions that the record is incomplete. And, you know, Oliver's...
Oh, you mean Carolyn, the Lebanon.
Correct. And Susan as well.
Oh.
And we have a part-time person maintaining that record. And when floods of documents come in, she's working as diligently as she can to index and get that record to be as current as it can be. In fact, Oliver's trying to get her to be a full-time person as opposed to a half-time so that we can keep up a little more effectively.
I think I understand that. Because I think she came up, they did a request from Greg Kimsey.
So correct.
And that's
correct.
Because this is exactly what
she
said.
Yeah, she wanted
there's
an
so
audit
many.
Done.
There's so many. Right. We're a little bit behind. So.
She wanted Mr. Kimsey to perform an audit, and I thank Mr. Kimsey for not agreeing to do that. But he did come and talk with me, and he talked with Oliver, and he's comfortable with our process.
Mr. McCauley,
pardon?
I just wanted to note that we've made it our practice in Councilor Medora's office for many, many months that any emails that come in, we forwarded them to Oliver. And
sure.
He gives us a response saying, thank you, I'll put it in public record.
Okay, and I'm not accusing anybody of not being diligent about that. I'm just asking that we keep our eye on that ball.
You you are accurate in your concern that some individuals have contacted one or the other of the counselors, but not all the counselors, because they may target it because they think you'll agree or because they want to persuade.
Right.
Anything related to the comp plan that I've received, inquiries or remarks or whatever, I've forwarded.
Okay.
And Peter, you're already doing that too, like Anna? Great. Okay.
Okay. Good. I tried to be brief.
Yeah, you did good. So
nice try.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Being that, I wonder if for the other email accounts that have not necessarily been forwarded, if it would be helpful. Linnea has access to all of our emails, right?
Mm-hmm.
If she can ensure that anything from my colleagues here that may not have made it could be forwarded.
Great. I'm sure that everything I got from Carol and Susan, that I was just copied along with all of you and probably Oliver. I hate to think that they didn't get all of those. I saved them.
Separate file.
At
my management team meeting tomorrow, I'm gonna ask all of the managers that if they receive, because you never know who's gonna receive input on what.
It'd be nice to ask Carol or Susan to be more specific what we should be looking for that wasn't included. It might be just a shot in the dark that they're putting across our bow.
It may be that they're going to bat for all the other citizens that are talking to them. That says, we sent something in and we never heard anything back. So it may not be specifically from them. It may be from others from their organization. Anyway, thank you very much for covering that. Sounds like it's in the works.
Thanks for being brief.
2.2, Peter Silliman, Washington Investment.
I think you have one draft. Here's an additional draft.
I've seen
draft.
It. I'm good with it.
Well, why don't we check this additional draft?
I want to see which draft it is because there's some inconsistency.
Councilor Stewart had several concerns she voiced yesterday after seeing the original draft.
Okay.
And it is very hard to find information online about this organization, this investment board. So I tried to include some additional information and some additional links to where I thought there was some useful information. I want to address any concerns that you have since you were the appointed member of the board.
The issue is simple. Skamania County EDC is looking for a board member for an investment fund that allocates, distributes national, federal money in the scenic area. So they call it the Washington Investment Board for the purposes of their committee. There is, however, a Washington Investment Board that invests billions. It's a state board that invests billions of dollars of our employee
retirement contribution.
So it's a little confusing because Skamania EDC calls this the Washington Investment Board, but it is actually identified on their website as Washington Investment Fund. So you might not think that's important, but this will be published in our list of boards and commissions. So I think so that there isn't confusion for the purpose of listing it in our boards and commissions, it should probably be Washington Investment Fund as opposed to board. So if they want to call it a board, I mean out in Skamania, I think to them it's a board, but... So
this is a group, an agency, a board, who receives federal dollars for distribution.
In the scenic, the gorge scenic area.
And who is it, a new one, or the people who sat on it before?
No, it's existing board.
Mm-hmm. And did Kelly Sills sit on that?
Yes, Kelly Sills attended in the absence of commissioners. Typically, they have commissioners or counselors on this board.
I got a question. This says that voting members are appointed by non-elected, non-public officials, see the EDCs. Is there anything that specifies in RCW who ought to sit on these boards? Shouldn't they be accountable public elected representatives?
Usually it's that way.
Well, that's on the bi-state.
Well, it's hard to believe that a private group of individuals would be in charge of government dollars.
Do we know, is there any state law that applies?
The information on this is a little hard to search out. You can find the tree of how it's organized, but you can see what the source of revenue is.
Really strange. I've been set taken back by seven of the members being appointed by the CREDC.
And then the list goes on.
There are board members. There are members appointed by the Washington Department of Commerce, which I think in some cases are private individuals. So you know as much about this as I do. In fact, you guys should know more because you've been here longer.
What? No excuse.
A little tiny tickle in the back of my brain is all I got.
Can we do this, Peter? Can you do some research and find out if there be any state law that applies to these boards that talks about the appropriate makeup, and then bring that back next week?
It just has to be, yeah.
Because Tom makes a good point. What do we have in private citizens? How do they get in a position where we're stewarding public funds when they're not even accountable to the public?
I can find the origin of how that happened.
Yep. So that brings up cemetery district.
Okay, so that's 2.2. That does. I hopefully we'll get answers from that.
Yeah.
Is that 2.3? That's you too. Peter, you want to lead?
Yes, I believe, again, you have an original draft. Some additional concerns were shared with me after I published that. So I have a second version of a draft. You can approve one or the other, or edit one or the other for approval. This was requested by Senator Benton in regards to the stormwater fee bill that was recently passed. He just wants a letter to the governor.
Yeah, he doesn't want to take any chances.
Yeah,
big one for us.
I'm good with either version. They both convey, and I'm willing to sign whatever you end up with that conveys that message.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'd like...
I've already signed on.
Okay, I spoke with Don about the changes he wanted to make, and I support the changes.
Okay. Right.
So if we can do the second draft.
So we have consensus, and we can just pass it out for signatures.
So we can get Tina the... all board members want to sign, or just the chair?
I think it would be good for all of us to sign.
Okay.
I've already weighed in on it.
Okay.
I'll give it to Tina as soon as we're done.
Does that wrap up 2.3, council reports? You got anything left, Tom?
No, I ran out.
Okay. Axel, you got anything?
I'm good.
Anna? Peter?
That's it. Thanks.
Mark?
I'd just like to say thanks for sitting through the lengthy CRAB presentation this morning. I was entertained by them, and I just thought it very, very important that the board get to meet these gentlemen and understand their role and the importance of that organization to our management of our county road fund.
Jay has been there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
A question. Who is it that recommended me to be the connection on this Washington Investment Fund? Who was it that sent it my way?
Well, I was that going was, to, that but was I wasn't
last month,
I
think the other two volunteered.
I think he left the room and then they stuck you with it.
That sounds like
no, I'm kidding.
Suspicious that we would. Yes. Is that okay?
Well, I would hope you guys would get your background material done and understand what you're doing before you do it.
You thought we'd pass the buck.
She's not going to let us off the hook on this, I can tell you.
You're so thorough. Surely you'll get it done.
You thought you'd pass the buck.
Thank you. That manager's meeting that you had this morning, was that something that we had to endure? That was hitting a home run. That was an amazing, eye-opening, refreshing revelation from those guys. And I see them as the model that all the other state agencies out of copy. Department of Transportation, can you believe that? And DOE.
Ecology,
etc. Yeah, yeah. That, those guys are amazing. That's good government in action. So you certainly did a home run with that one. I hope you're able to post some good stuff on that.
Well, like I said, Bill Wright, you know, he's going to leave us here after 16 years, and he came to me and said, I think we ought to get the crab down here and have our board learn about it. And so I give Bill Wright all the credit.
Yeah, county
good,
administrative.
Good that they know that we support them because they support us.
Correct. Road administration board. Holly, have
crab.
Anything?
I do not.
Doesn't matter,
okay.
But I like it too.
All right. Are we done?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
All right.
Good job, everybody.